meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Alrighty, good evening everyone listening on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network, whether you're listening live on the internet stream, if you're listening to the podcast after the show, if you're picking us up on satellite or Access Communications Channel 7, it's always nice to have you tonight. It's a year-in-review show, and we've got a couple of very interesting guests tonight. L.A. County Deputy District Attorney Robin Sachs is here. And then, of course, my good friend, producer, New York Times bestselling author, actor. He's the newsbreaker, Larry Garrison. And what we're going to do is we're going to go over a lot of the stories for the next hour that we have talked about here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hi, Dana.
Hi there.
Hi, Robin.
Hey, Larry.
Now, it's, you know, I was just talking to the producer here that's running the video for the little TV feed that we do for the show at the same time. And I said to her, I said, you know, 2007 is, well, it's basically, it sucked. At least I think so. It's been a difficult year. The news has been unbelievably depressing. We just had an assassination here a couple of days ago. It seems like on one side things are under control, but on the other side it seems like things are just going to pot. And what I thought I would do is go over, I've got five or six different stories here, and we can spend a few minutes on each one, and that will pretty much cover the whole hour. But one thing I want to talk about, and I want to start with you, Larry, and then we'll go into Robin, is the type of stories that we've seen. You with the newsbreaker and the type of stories that you've covered for 30-some years, I see that the journalistic integrity this year has kind of gone down the drain, and one of the biggest stories that really put a stopgap as far as being someone with integrity to just kind of schlock media was the whole Anna Nicole story. A lot of embarrassment, a lot of journalistic malfeasance, if you could say that. What are your thoughts on Anna Nicole in 2007?
I have been gifted the ability to hear what most people don't hear, the other side, the truth of the story. And as I always say to people, the truth is better than the spin. It's incredible. And it's a shame what they did with Anna Nicole. When you think about the money that was paid out, the book that was written, and the accusations that were made, and the lawsuits that are going on right now, I'd love to see it go back to the days, and I hate to date myself, but when Walter Cronkite would come on TV, that was the news.
Right.
When Diane Sawyer comes on TV, she, to me, is the epitome of the old school journalist. And we still have some people like that. And you do see certain people leaving their positions, like from MSNBC and other places, and the public, I think, is becoming a lot smarter right now and choosing who they want to get the news from.
Robin, the term pundit comes around, and you've done some work on Larry King's show as a legal analyst, but you've seen all these analysts and all of these so-called experts come on TV, cover a story that really isn't a story, but the story is more about the story, if that makes sense. I know I'm rambling here a little bit about Anna Nicole. Your thoughts on the analyst's view of this story? Like, this story was rode hard. We haven't heard about it in a little bit, but it's gone from every direction now to a civil suit that's pending to a coroner's inquest in the Bahamas, to you name it, has just gone crazy. Your thoughts as far as the analyst aspect of that?
Well, there's two thoughts that I have, actually, from the analyst point of view. First of all, there's the deputy district attorney point of view that I have, which is the people that watch, listen, and read all the different forms of media out there are my jurors.
Right.
And those are the people who are then going to be potentially on panels of just your regular, everyday folks who are victims and defendants in crime. And what happens is that the whole expectation of this glamorized story starts seeping its way into the courtroom, and there's an expectation that is just not the reality of how 99% of the other cases are handled and dealt with. So it changes, first of all, the burdens of proof. I think that a reasonable doubt becomes all doubt. I think there's expectations of all kinds of money that would be spent in a, just as there would be in an investigation in a case like Anna Nicole Smith or in Aruba or in any of these other cases where there are tons and tons of resources, both private and public, being put forward. I think the expectation is that we should have all these kinds of resources in just the everyday case. And then also you have the people out there who are making comments and the pundits out there who are making comments who have a voice of some sort of authority who can then are responsible for educating the population on what they are learning in terms of the legal system. And if they don't have it right, they're misinforming and doing so much more damage than good. So it's a frightening time. It's wonderful to have the access and the ability to be able to learn, but it's horrendous what can happen on the downside, in my view. And but, you know, along the lines of what Larry says, if the goal is to seek the truth, which is what we're trying to do in a trial,
right,
and you have the sensationalization and those expectations, what the jurors kind of want is what's not true, because that's kind of what's more exciting.
When you look at, and we talked about journalistic integrity from the journalist, the host, there's got to be an integrity for the analyst, too, that comes on. You just can't come on a show, and I know I've seen your work. You come on prepared. You know what the topic is, and you're able to voice an opinion. Have the analysts in 2007, in particular with this case, Robin, done a good job when they've represented, say, and sadly, district attorneys are very few and far between besides yourself and maybe a couple of ex-ones, but the defense lawyers and others that have come on to speak their mind, or are they just coming on to get their few minutes of fame and say what they want no matter what the consequences are?
Well, I think there's a mixed bag of people out there, just like in any line of work. There's some people who are really good and there's some people that are not. I think that the people who are the ones that are the tent hanger-outers in the court TV, kind of wingspan are problematic. Those are the people that are just going to try to get onto the news. The people who are the regular hosts who have a crew to be able to do some research and have resources to be able to get information tend to be more factual and have more information. But they have a story to sell, and if it's not going to sell with the truth, then sometimes you don't get the whole story out.
If you're just tuning in, we have Larry Garrison, the newsbreaker, and Los Angeles County Deputy District Attorney Robin Sachs with us tonight, and we're going over 2007, some of the high-profile cases we've covered here on the Dana Pretzer Show. Larry, Aruba, you know, there's a story that, of course, you've written a book on. You're close with the family. You've interviewed with me many, many times on this topic. We've seen this story spin 360 degrees backwards, forwards. There's a underwater search going on right now to find Natalie. We've had everything from boycotts of the island to threats of violence to people, to you name it. This thing has gone absolutely crazy. But the sad part about this whole issue is that there's a family still without answers. There's an island that is unsafe. And there's the hope that we all have that Natalie will be found and can be laid to rest. But who knows? Here's a story that we need to spend some time with. You've written the book about it. Well, I want to start with you.
Well, first and foremost, I wrote the book with my sister, R. Stephanie Good, and Dave Holloway.
Yep.
And I have, it's funny, I just got off the phone with Stephanie, and I have never come out and verbalized in the way I'm going to do this with you, because I was never in the position to, there was always false hope that things would be settled, that something would come to be. I've lost my hope in as far as I believe that someone someday may come forward. I do believe that the truth comes out in the end.
Right.
But I never really came forward and said that I, with the aid of my sister Stephanie, brought Joran van der Sloot to New York. And I brought him there knowing and feeling that he was lying, that he would go on Good Morning America and be caught in a lie, like Scott Peterson was with Diane Sawyer. I was hoping that maybe he would slip up. He came to me. He wanted me to write a book for him. He gave me information that nobody had. I had documents from Aruba, from the FBI. I saw things, heard things, and heard more important between him and Deepak, who was going to come here also at one point. They were so inconsistent with what they had to say about the whole story that it is my opinion that Deepak, Satish, and Joran killed Natalie. It is my opinion that Paulus van der Sloot helped the boys get rid of Natalie. And beyond the shadow of a doubt, when I hear Joe Tacopina on TV speaking about the innocence of his client, I have a son, I have two daughters, and I'll tell you, I am infuriated that it got to this point and that Aruba played these families just for the sake of lifting the boycott. And I can tell you one thing. This boycott will never go away till the truth comes out. And, Dana, I have never come out. You know, we've talked about it in the book, and I've danced around on TV. But this last fiasco was sad, really sad. Now, one other thing I want to point out. I'd be speaking to Dave Holloway in his home while the press was reporting that he was in Aruba.
Right.
Shame on the press. Shame on the spin. Shame on what they allowed these people to get away with. I set up the interview with Greta, with Joran van der Sloot, and he had his speech down so pat for someone to come on like Greta, and I love Greta, she's a journalist, and say, I think he's probably innocent.
Right.
You know, that's not journalism at its best. And I do hope that somebody someday comes out and tells the truth so Dave Holloway and Beth can put their head on the pillow at night and at least have some sort of an answer.
We've all given up, so to speak, from our perspective as far as justice and Aruba. I suppose anything is possible, Robin, but the whole question, and you mentioned it earlier about the putting on your district attorney hat in the jury pool. Here you have a case, and you've covered the Holloway disappearance, and you and I, in fact, have talked about this, where you have hosts going out and interviewing potential witnesses that may or may not have spoken to the police. You have hosts that are, you know, basically giving their opinion, saying that they believe this person after a very rehearsed interview, softball questions, etc. You know, where did they go wrong? Is this a salvageable case? or was it just the ball was dropped right from the get-go and we'll never see an answer as far as a court disposition when it comes to Holloway and the island of Aruba?
Well, I have to say, with the second, you know, arrest and release, it makes it an uphill battle in terms of a prosecution. If there was a filing and a case after that second arrest, even though there had been all of the discussions and all of the media involved over the course of the last few years, it wouldn't be, it was still a workable case. It would be fine. It would be difficult, but it would be fine. At this point, I think that it would be an uphill battle, absent some completely new, separate, unexposed, true piece of evidence or statement or anything along those lines. I mean, there are cases that, you know, get solved many, many, many years later.
Sure, yeah.
And there are cases that are without bodies, so, you know, there's no requirement or need for a body. But I think in this case, unfortunately, I think that what the media will have done is you kind of change the standard of proof. Now, and what Aruba will do is, you know, I'm thinking about it with a United States American view criminal justice system.
Absolutely.
Not in the Aruban criminal justice system, which I'm questioning the justice part of that justice system right now.
Well, the Aruban system, we've all sat here and I've interviewed many people directly involved, including the family members and both of you, and we all have to agree that the Aruban justice system is a head scratcher, to say the least. But, you know, I've been maybe hard sometimes on defense attorneys, and I know the system as well as anyone, and there is a place for everyone. There are many, 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 many good defense attorneys out there. But I've been a little hard on some, and Joe Tacopina, for example, I've called him a loudmouth New York lawyer, and I don't mean to label New York lawyers as loudmouths, but, you know, Robin, when it comes to these types of high-profile cases, and the Holloway case, for example, a good defense attorney uses the media as much as they can, do they not?
They can. It depends what their client is like. I usually find that really skilled defense attorneys just as advise their clients to, you know, keep their mouth shut.
Right.
All to everybody, police, media, everyone included. And obviously, in the United States, you don't have a Fifth Amendment Miranda right that kicks in when you're, you know, being interviewed on television, and you're freely and voluntarily making statements, and it's not a law enforcement person. Those statements can be used against you. So you have to be really rehearsed, and you have to have a lot of faith in your client to be able to pull it off. So I think that if there's minor stakes, using the media is one thing, but I don't think that a really skilled attorney is going to put their client out there for a prosecutor to later pick apart that argument or use it in a trial. I mean, the Spector case is a perfect example, actually.
Yep.
If you, going back to that case, and Phil Spector, when he had made statements calling the district attorney, you know, Nazi henchman, you know, the prosecution made an idea, a decision not to introduce that statement to the jury in that case, but there was a lot of statements that would have been very helpful to the prosecution's case.
You know, Larry, when you've written the book with your sister and Dave Holloway, and if you and Steph and Dave sat down a year from now and wanted to write an epilogue to the story, what would you hope that epilogue would be?
Well, we all hope and pray that there'll be a resolution that Dave and Beth will find out what happened to their daughter. And I don't think they will ever give up. There was talk about finalizing a chapter and having the answer, but without, you know, it's not like doing movies. Right now I could do a movie and end the movie with a crawl at the end that,
right,
we are awaiting for an answer, for someone to come forward on Natalie Holloway's murder or disappearance and boycott Aruba. In a book, at this point, until there is something that is concrete, it's been the never-ending story. And the good part about this is that I don't think Dave and Beth will settle for the ending till they get the truth. And, you know, a lot of people came to me and they were very angry with Stephanie and I and said, why did you choose a young blonde girl from down south instead of a black girl from Washington, D.C. that was missing?
Right.
Natalie became the symbol of everybody's child. And it is my opinion that Natalie's case will keep on going all through next year.
Yeah.
And it's not going to end because there are people, we have our websites, we have people that are infuriated. Do you know that Jeroen Vandersloot had the audacity to make a statement to a paper that he's sorry that it didn't go to trial?
Yeah.
Well, we're sorry it didn't go to trial also.
Yeah, so am I.
But it will go to trial someday. I do believe that somebody's going to come forward. I do believe there's a chance now that they may find her body. But, you know, you can't, these three kids can't have the perfect crime. I believe somebody somewhere along the line is going to realize that, hey, we can make something off of this. There's a reward. There's something here. I can have a claim to fame. They're going to come forward. This is not going to go away, Dana. And the answer to all of this is boycott Aruba. Big time.
If you're just tuning in, Los Angeles County Deputy District Attorney Robin Sachs is here, and New York Times bestselling author, producer, and president of Silver Creek Entertainment, Larry Garrison. Robin, Drew Peterson, there's a guy that, you know, if you were to pick up the cheapest dime store novel, you would have a character like Drew Peterson. 30 years as a cop, as much mystery and strangeness in his life, wives, allegations of corruption in his job as a police officer, the death of a wife, her exhumation, the disappearance of another wife, the non-stop cable coverage, news reports, you name it. We can use terms narcissistic, sociopath, whatever you want, but this has got to be a story of all stories. And I want to ask you what you think from the perspective as a district attorney. You know, is this labeling officers as bad? Is there so much coverage because this guy was a cop?
Well, I think that there's so much coverage because not only because he's a cop. That's an interesting story in and of itself. But what's also interesting is the, you know, disappearance. The alleged, you know, drowning death of, you know, wife number three.
Right.
And going through and having multiple wives and being a police officer.
Jeez.
And the domestic violence allegations and threats that were there. Also having such a young wife missing is in itself an interesting story. And then the last part of it that makes it an interesting story is that his last name is Peterson.
Yeah, exactly.
And, they, you know, and they have a daughter, Lacey Peterson. I think it's all, you know, you can't write this stuff.
Well, that, you know, when I used the term dime store novel, Larry, I meant that literally. And you've worked so long and so hard for many, many years. And a part of your job that you do is you speak with the families. And there's a lot of families involved directly and indirectly with this whole Drew Peterson saga. What do you do when it comes to the families? Like, there's a lot of people out there that are, again, looking for answers.
Well, right now, I've been speaking to and working with the Savio family, who firmly believes that Kathleen was murdered, his third wife, was murdered by him. It's funny, someone came forward just recently, and we don't know if this is true or not, so it's just conjecture.
Right.
And this could be blown out of proportion. But someone claimed that they might have been possibly Stacy Peterson's alibi for the night that Kathleen was murdered. And with conjecture, if and only if she was, and she was going to leave him, that would have given him motive to possibly murder Stacy. And, you know, you hear these things and, you know, you don't know what to believe. That's the beauty of being on the inside. It makes a lot of sense. But one thing that really bothers me is I love Greta. I think at times she does a great job with her stories. But then she'll put four analysts on, and it's different. I watched Robin, and by the way, Robin, you were incredible on Larry King. I love your comments on my stories, and thank you. But when I see four people set up on Greta's show, and they debate each other, and each one already has, it seems like they've taken a position so there'd be a dichotomy of what they have to say to make the show much more interesting. I think it's overdoing it. I really do. It's no longer news when you go to that point. As far as the Savios are concerned right now, Greta did a wonderful thing where she brought somebody in. There may have been her intent to have a scoop on the story and get ratings like she did with Aruba, but she had her own guy do the autopsy on Kathleen and be able to speak out. The Savios right now are, one, frightened,
yeah,
Drew Peterson, and at the same time, they're fighting for the truth to come out. And they're not very optimistic right now. And I don't understand why, because if anything, if he's going to be brought down, it's probably going to be on the autopsy on Kathleen.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know,
that I agree with. But I do have one comment for you,
sure,
Larry, actually, just because in terms of commentating on some of these shows where you have multiple opinions and different attorneys,
mm-hmm,
on the shows. I get pre-screened for these interviews beforehand, and, you know, I have the Robin as a citizen, Robin as a mom who has kids, and, you know, Robin as a author, and then there's Robin as the DA. And when I'm getting pre-screened, they'll often tell me who the defense attorney that I will be up against, and one of the things that they like is to create that up-against feeling as if you are in a courtroom. And in a courtroom, it's totally appropriate to stand by and have your theory and say what you're going to say, so long as it conforms with your theory of the case. I think that it is overdone on television, where you are trying to play out the courtroom dichotomy through the voice of pundits, and then what ends up happening is you don't really get the true feeling, which is what I really think people in society think they're getting and want. That is, what do these people as human beings think, besides with the legal skills that they may have in their background? So that's why what Larry does is so valuable in terms of bringing the truth to everything, because so much of that is not what gets ratings.
But Robin, anybody can go on TV and say that they're an analyst and they have a point of view. But when you have an ex-cop coming on and he's giving his theory, and that's one thing, and then you've got an attorney and you've got a prosecutor and you've got people coming up with conjecture, you can overdo it. And sometimes, for me, I'd rather listen to the news and hear it reported, or watch a 60 Minutes that will, or a 2020 that will show the facts of the case, rather than having a bunch of people who I don't feel have the same credibility as some of the other people. If Mark Garagos goes on and he speaks out, I'd listen to Mark over somebody else, let's say. Or I'd listen to you. You're a deputy DA. You may have insight on the case that somebody else doesn't. We're starting to see people coming out of the woodwork now who are just giving opinions and just trying to be heard. And it's shameful. It's not the news any longer. And, you know, and believe me, I've been up against some of the best. Wendy Murphy, who's been on your show, she's, yep. I love Wendy. She's great.
Yep.
And Robin, I put you in the same category as Wendy Murphy.
Yep.
If you have something to say, I'd listen to you because it would be interesting because it would be another facet. But to listen to a show like Greta, let's say, and to hear the same four guys talk about 15 different stories over the next 2 weeks, enough is enough.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back here in just a few minutes on the Dana Pretzer Show. Tonight, we're doing 2007, a year in review, with Los Angeles County Deputy District Attorney Robin Sachs and New York Times bestselling author Larry Garrison. We call him the Newsbreaker. We'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Alrighty, we are back tonight. We're doing a 2007 year in review with my guests, Los Angeles County District Deputy District Attorney Robin Sachs and New York Times bestselling author. We call him the Newsbreaker, Larry Garrison. You know, guys, when we've seen the news and we talked about the depressing aspect of it a little earlier on, some of the tragedies that we've seen are these the shootings, the hostage takings, Virginia Tech. You know, when I picked a few stories here that we wanted to talk about this evening, I probably could have picked 25 and we'd done 3 hours, but I picked a few, and Virginia Tech is so important. I've done shows about Virginia Tech with analysts like Clint Van Zandt and other profilers talking about this, the shooter Cho. We've done with the firearms pro crowd saying that if we had a professor who was armed, he could have taken Cho out earlier. And I've done shows about gun control, that if there was more strict gun regulation, that Cho would have never been able to get the guns, and that's that whole aspect. I'm going to start with you, Robin. Here is a whole tragedy. We see more and more of it all the time, the whole gun issue. What are we going to do, or what can we do to protect our students, to protect our kids? Because we seem to have these stories more and more each day. Are we too lax when it comes to this, so Cho, the type of people like Cho can get the guns and go in and do these massacres?
Well, I think that, you know, the number one thing that I try to teach parents is to listen to their intuition. And I think that from on a very basic level, all the signs and symptoms were there, right there for us, it was up for grabs for all of us to take. And with so many of these massacre-type shootings, Columbine the Nebraska shooting in the mall, and
right.
Virginia Tech, you have all of these kind of situations where everyone, all the legal pundits, end up coming back and drawing, connecting the dots and saying, you know, we saw all the signs and symptoms there and did nothing about it. It's what it is it's being proactive and listening to the intuition when it's happening. If there's something that feels wrong in terms of the signs we're getting, you know, in the Cho case, there was police involvement, there were threats, there were other many opportunities that have nothing to do with gun laws that could have alerted us to the danger, the potential danger of this gentleman. So, guns are one part of it, and having stricter gun laws is kind of an easy, quick fix, but I don't think that someone who is really dedicated to doing something along these lines is going to be deterred by stricter gun laws.
You know, the manifesto aspect of it, Larry, the news organizations releasing the video of Cho. Most recently, we've had that mall shooting where the media released some of the suicide note and other aspects of it. From the media perspective, when you start releasing this type of you know, the Unabomber is a good example. What they want you to hear, BTK killer, those types of stories. We're giving these psychos their 50 minutes of fame. A lot of the time they've already taken their lives, but is it a public craving? Is it that news organizations are, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, we want to get the ratings? Or is this truly an education where if we see this kind of stuff, we can actually help ourselves prevent another showcase from happening or whatever?
Well, there were so many signs with Cho that it could have been avoided, possibly. The reality of the situation here is you can't stop reporting the news because some people feel that by glorifying these people, you're giving them their heyday, so therefore you're inspiring them to go out and do it. People like this, I mean, he sent videos to NBC 2 days later denouncing the rich. I mean, you're not going to stop somebody like this.
Right.
They have their own agenda, and they believe in their own mind that this is going to put them down in history, whether they're going to be on the news or not. It's like a suicide bomber. I believe that though this was horrific and people died, some good has come out of this, where there has been some change for gun law. I do believe by reporting the news that other institutions have evaluated what should be done and what kind of protection we can give to our kids. We do learn from the news. History repeats itself. I worked on the Unabomber. I worked with the Harris family through the whole thing with Columbine. And all I can tell you is history repeats, and if we don't report it and report it properly, then nobody's going to learn from the mistakes that have been done. It's the sensationalism part, the spin, where they glorify and repeat things rather than showing it as a piece of news and ending it. That may be the only hindrance there, but most definitely the public wants to know what's going on all the time.
And these guys, you know, the Chos and the whatevers are well aware that when they go out and they do their deed, they do their massacre, they do whatever, that they're going to be in the media. And one story that I covered, and I know you have worked with John Futrell, is the North Hollywood shootout 10 years later. You had 10 years ago these body armored bank robbers, cops put on the sacrificed, I guess, in a case like this. And I want to ask you, Larry, and then I'll see if, first of all, if Robin can comment, because it's in her area. As far as stories like that, as far as here we are 10 years later, we're going to talk about the Ramsey case a little later on, the old stories that are being talked about again 10 years later, like the North Hollywood shootout, they're important and people are just as interested today as they were then, are they not?
They are, though the breaking news, the what we call the oh my God stories, the crimes that have not been solved, seem to be at the top of the list because it's something that hasn't been solved, and a lot of people like to play detective. But going back and looking at John Futrell, who in my eyes was a hero,
yes,
and lost his job for being a hero because the family sued the police department, you know, again, we learn from those mistakes. And their law enforcement now is well equipped, or a lot more equipped than they were before, if that was to happen again.
Robin, is our police departments, is the system better prepared today than they were in 1997 after the North Hollywood shootout? That was it was quite a thing. It was a small war, for lack of a better term.
It was. I think that Yes and no, I guess, is my answer. I know you love those kinds of answers. But yes, I think law enforcement is more prepared in terms of the what if and, you know, and the spectrum because of cases and that have occurred over the years have kind of been beyond the imagination in so many ways that with every new scenario, there's more things to practice and learn in the academy. However, because there are so many new mechanisms by way crimes are committed, and we were just speaking during the break about the internet, and the internet being a huge part of the whole kind of dimension of crime now, it's hard to keep up and practice everything because there's always some, even though everything does repeat itself, it repeats itself but with a new spin. And when it does have a new spin, you can't practice that.
You know,
Dana, I'd like to add one thing.
Sure.
Red from Scad Monkeys, who has covered a tremendous amount of my stories. The internet affords the ability not to do the spin. Red has been able to come out and say things that you wouldn't hear on TV because he doesn't care what people think. All he wants to do is report the news. And that's what's important. And you do that also. And to me, that's going back to the Walter Cronkite era. That's where things are changing. Because I believe the future will be with the internet.
And it's guys like Red who are doing it the right way. And in a lot of cases, the blogosphere, the blogs like Scared Monkeys are, you know, embarrassing the mainstream media a little bit because we're getting it right and they're just making fools of themselves. But I want to make one more comment on the Futrell case in the North Hollywood shootout. The Los Angeles Police Department, and I know you lecture at their academy, Robin, is one of the best police departments in the world. However, shame on them for what they did to John Futrell. When I spoke to John and I've interviewed him, there's a guy that would put the blue suit back on tomorrow and go out and serve the public. Even after everything that's happened to him, you can't find those type of cops anymore. Anyway, that's besides the story.
I agree, most definitely.
There's an excellent book called A Rush to Injustice. I think you know the author, Larry, Stephanie Good. She's monitoring us tonight and sending you some emails, I'm sure. But the Duke LaCrosse case, Mike and I Fong, these young boys basically had their lives ripped away from them, Robin. It was a huge story in 2007. We covered it. We talked about the book with Stephanie and the co-author. And Mike Nifong basically saw the cameras, in my opinion, saw a way to get reelected, and in, you know, between time, he sewered himself and brought down the credibility of the district attorney's office and a lot of district attorneys. Robin, your perspective on Nifong and this case.
This case makes me so angry. I can't tell you how many times I've had to deal with it in jury selection. I now have a prepared motion on this where I have to have defense attorneys instructed not to be forbidden from referencing the Nifong case and insinuating that my office in any way has acted in any similar fashion. But it's unfortunate that it's, you know, the one bad apple, you know, spoils the whole bunch here. And in cases where it's sexual assault, which are the most difficult cases to prove anyway, and the most vulnerable victims that end up victims of the crime, to have a prosecutor where you really haven't had, you know, it's the cops out there that get the bad rap and that's exposed, and now you add a new dimension to having a prosecutor who has gone out and totally lost credibility. Now you have this kind of two agency view against one, and it wreaks havoc on cases all across the country.
You know, Larry, Stephanie and her co-author did such a great job with this book.
A wonderful book. And I had gone to New York and I met with the families. And if you meeting these boys, it was, I could not believe that they would have been accused of anything. The families were so incredible, so loving, so spiritual, and I was just blown away that something like this could happen. But, you know, as a journalist, look at all the good that came out of this, because I believe that this would not have, people would not have the propensity to rush to judgment in the future just by looking at this case. Though it could happen again, but I don't believe it will as fast as it did with these three boys.
I got to cut in for a second, Larry. Stephanie just emailed me saying that if you're going to talk about Duke, then she is going to have to do an interview with me about the newsbreaker. So I think that's a fair.
Well, I brought Stephanie, in all fairness, I brought Stephanie along to New York with me, but then she went on her own and did her book, which I think is incredible. And yes, Stephanie, she could talk about the newsbreaker anytime she wants, because she's worked with me over the years with some of the incredible stories. And Robin, you have to meet my sister, because both of you are against pedophiles.
You know, they...
And most definitely, Robin, I think what you do and what Stephanie does is incredible. Just incredible. I applaud the both of you.
Just a couple more minutes on Nifong, Robin. You mentioned it, and I find it interesting that this whole label of prosecutors Nifong, in fact, there's been some defense attorneys, in fact, in the Aruba case, that have come forward and talked about the Aruban prosecutors being like Mike Nifong. There was a huge amount of damage. Not that I don't want to harp on this, but it's so important how that whole persona of this rush to injustice is such a perfect name, has just black marked the whole system, so to speak. Did you ever think it would be possible for a case like this to do so much damage?
Well, I never thought there would be a case like this. I really, not to say that there aren't other prosecutors who have made poor decisions, but this was so disgusting on so many levels that it really, I couldn't imagine that an officer of the court, people who hold themselves out as fact finders, truth seekers. The job of a prosecutor is to represent all of the people, not just to represent victims. It's representing all of the people in a particular jurisdiction. So not filing charges is equally as important as filing charges. And there are ways to show honor and get reelected at the same time. They don't need to be inconsistent messages. And so to choose this method as the way of seeking re-election is unbelievable to me.
If you're just tuning in, Los Angeles County Deputy District Attorney Robin Sachs is here, and producer, New York Times bestselling author, we call him the newsbreaker, Larry Garrison. We have about 8 minutes left. We're going over some of the stories, and I know we could have picked probably 10 more and done 2 hours tonight, but some of the high-profile cases that we covered here on Scared Monkeys, and I want to make a point of thanking Red and everyone at Scared Monkeys for all their hard work and support in 2007, and of course we look forward to working with you and doing a lot more shows in the days and weeks and months to come. But Larry, again, another case that has came back for a while, a high-profile case I know that you covered, and then it reared its ugly head again, this time with no answers, but a lot of news coverage, was the JonBenet Ramsey case, and a individual by the name of John Mark Carr. Now, I've spoken to a lot of people in my life, and, you know, you get that gut instinct, that feeling when you talk to someone. I never interviewed him, but I did speak with John Mark Carr on the telephone one day for about a half hour, 45 minutes, and I got to admit that when I hung up the phone, I would have loved to have interviewed him, that the hair on the back of my neck was standing up. This was quite a guy, quite a story. Your thoughts on John Mark Carr and the JonBenet Ramsey case in 2007?
Well, I was lucky enough to visit him in jail. And I have some unanswered questions. How did the sheriff, how did the FBI, why and how did they lose his hard drives? That's unbelievable.
Exactly.
I believe there's more to the story. It is my personal opinion that John might have been there. Maybe not at the capacity that other people would like to believe. But John told me face to face that he has proof that he was there at the appropriate time. He might reveal it. He was looking to do a book. Most definitely, I do believe that he has psychological problems. I do believe that at a certain point he was a glory seeker. But to sit through the trial and to hear about things that were missing, like a hard drive, I was wondering if they were using John Mark Carr to get to somebody else.
Maybe, yeah.
And I covered the Ramsey story way back when. And so I had a love for and a want and a need to find out more. And meeting John Mark Carr not only freaked me out, I didn't sleep for weeks after that, but it left me with a lot of unanswered questions.
And again, a family with unanswered questions. Robin, you know, besides Aruba, which the whole court system there, nobody can figure out, but some cases take years, decades, in fact, to be solved. And as long as the evidence is there and there's still someone to prosecute. But from the perspective of this whole Ramsey case, the prosecutor, them bringing him back from Thailand and all the news coverage, was there a rush to judgment? Or was there a good decision made, but it just wasn't followed up properly, and here we are right back at square one again?
Well, I think that when you have a case, any murder case, high profile, not high profile, when you have a tip or a confession or any other new evidence, you need to act on it, and the sooner you act on it, the better. I think that I think if you don't act on it soon and in a timely fashion, then there's a whole bunch of criticism that it must not have been good. You must not have believed it. It must not have been. There must not have been any credibility or veracity to it. So I think that you can, you know, say that there's a rush to judgment in the way it was handled. However, I think the rush to judgment is really the spin again,
right.
And not really the truth.
I think that's the
story, but the fact of the matter is that there was an investigation, and there was an investigation about a statement and a confession and information that was going to potentially solve one of the biggest unsolved murder mysteries, you know, of the last decade. So how can you not, you know, quickly respond to that? I don't know how you get around that.
I agree with you, and I think the Boulder DA did a great job. Got crucified in the media somewhat for it, but you had to do something. Listen, we're down to about 2 minutes. I thought I'd give you each an opportunity to talk about what you're going to be doing in 2008, and we'll start out with Larry.
Well, I hope to do many more stories and more books. I hope to be working with my sister, our Stephanie Good, doing some more books with her. And I'm hoping that you keep doing your show. And I hope somebody out there sees your talents, and you keep me in mind for the future. Because as far as I'm concerned, Dana, you know, all the shows that I've been on, I enjoy being on your show the most.
Well, I think we do it a different way here. And again, I want to thank all the folks at Scared Monkeys Red in particular, that we actually don't do interviews in 30-second or 2-minute sound bites. We let the guests interact with the host, and we spend some time dealing with the issues, and that's something that you don't see in the mainstream media. Robin, you're busy. You're a analyst on television. It's a different sort of perspective with you because you're still a working district attorney, and you're covering the kids' cases. You're going after the pedophiles. You're doing great work. What is up for you in 2008?
Well, in 2008, I'm hoping that the two worlds that I live in, my parenting, prosecuting, my parenting world and my prosecuting world come together and my book get published. That's my number one goal for 2008, which we'll all keep our fingers crossed on that. But I am working on continuing my efforts in terms of educating the community in internet safety. I've just joined the Department of Justice Commission with the governor of California, presenting internet safety tips. I'll be speaking at a summit, really just, you know, kind of go through the grassroots in terms of educating the community on how to keep kids safe so that I don't need to see them in my office as victims. And but I will continue putting up my good fight in court and hopefully learn as much as I can on a daily basis so I can join you in the evenings and be able to speak truthfully about how other cases are handled throughout the country.
Well, two tough gals, Stephanie Good and Robin Sachs, are out there. They're kicking butt for all these internet creeps, and we'll put as many pedophiles and internet creeps as we can in jail. Listen, Larry Garrison, Robin Sachs, I want to thank you for spending some time with me this evening and throughout 2007, and I hope we can do more programs in 2008.
Thank you, and
so
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Okay.
Stephanie.
Take care, folks. Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, that's it. That's 2007, a year in review. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. I remind you that our webpage is scaredmonkeysradio.com, and for the creme de la creme of blogs, go to scaredmonkeys.com. Let's hope that 2008 brings some closure to the disappearance of Natalie Holloway, and Natalie is laid to rest at home with her family as she deserves to be. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.